This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Comics and Graphic Novels, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Dr. Elizabeth Woke, a host of the channel, and today I'll be talking with Dr. Stephen O'Sullivan about his book, The Comic Book as Research Tool, Creative Visual Research for the Social Sciences, which was published in 2023. Dr. Stephen O'Sullivan is a lecturer in marketing and consumer culture at University College Cork, the Cork University Business School. His research is primarily situated in the consumer culture theory dimensions of marketplace cultures and consumer identity projects. Current research involves an investigation of contemporary play, particularly that which is harmful in nature. Stephen is an advocate for the greater application of creative media in social sciences, and his published works can be found in The Marketing Theory, Journal Psychology and Marketing, Journal of Management Marketing, and he also contributes to research films at different film festivals, including the Indie Cork Film Festival. His book contributes to a growing body of work which celebrates the visual methods and tools that aid knowledge transfer and welcome new audiences to social science research. Visual research methodology milestones highlight a trajectory towards the adoption of more creative and artistic media. As such, the book is dedicated to exploring the creative potential of the comic book medium and how it can assist in the production and communication of scientific knowledge. The cultural blueprint of the comic book is examined, and the unique structure and grammar of the form is deconstructed and adapted for research support. Along with two illustrated research comics called Toxic Play and 10 Business Days, the book offers readers numerous comics-based illustration activities and creative visual exercises to support data generation, foster conversational knowledge exchanges, facilitate inference, analysis, and interpretation, while nurturing the necessary skills to illustrate and create research comics. The book engages a diverse audience and is an illuminating read for visual novices, experts, and all those in-betweeners. In this interview, Stephen talks about using comics in the social sciences, pandemic comics, and the socio-cultural media spiral. All right, so Dr. Stephen O'Sullivan, welcome to the show. Stephen, could you please give us a background on what led you to your specialization?
Yeah, sure. Thanks very much for having me. It's great to be here. So like most people, I didn't really understand fully what I wanted to do in university. So I did a generic kind of business studies degree. I got pretty much interested in advertising and consumer behavior during that. I went on to do a food marketing master's, and it's kind of there where I got introduced to interpretive consumer research through the past and teaching of Brendan Richardson. So he introduced me to some great ethnographic research that I hadn't really come across before. So it's because of that, then I got so interested, I said I'd conduct my PhD under Brendan Richardson as well. So I was exploring professional beer pong subculture, and I was looking at the forms of play embedded in their different types of consumption. So that was a pretty wild ride. So it was like through that experience of researching the extremities of there, I kind of became interested in using comics because I had unrepresentable kind of data. So from there, I kind of got interested in methodology then. And what I would say then is I kind of see myself expanding more beyond the kind of confines of business research because of this interest in methodology.
All right. And in that methodology, your book, The Comics Book as Research Tool, Creative Visual Research for the Social Sciences, there we go. It is a big, big, big project. And I really appreciate that you took that on. What exactly did you see around you that made you say, I need to make a handbook for this?
Yeah, so this was there was a couple of things colliding. I do discuss it in the origin story of the book that during a PhD seminar, I began using research comics as a way of representing the Bear Pond community. And I had a lot of people coming over and asking me how they might use comics then as well to help support their research. So I was definitely one of the things presenting the comic book data, then research data, throughout various different research conferences. I always kind of had this feedback that, you know, people felt that it should be more than just a representation technique, that it could be, you know, a full-blown methods handbook. So generally, because of the feedback from, you know, other people to continue on this area of research and to make a handbook, that would certainly be one of them. The second is generally the lack of kind of the methodological toolkit in general that social science researchers have. So it was about kind of, I suppose, stimulating appreciation for visual research in general. So it's kind of these things colliding. Also then, I suppose, when we kind of think of society in general, where we're becoming less willing to engage in these novel forms of methodology, we're kind of, a lot of the time, we find it hard to stray from the, you know, off the book, off the shelf type methodology. So this was a hope to try to get people more comfortable moving outside their traditional, you know, methodologies and to become more interested in visual research. That was generally the goal.
All right. And quoting Michael Taussig, also from the book, you noted, drawing intervenes in the reckoning of reality in ways that writing and photography do not. And you say that it can render extraordinary meetings visible that otherwise would go unexposed, unexperienced, or unfelt, quoting Alfonso Ramos from 2004. I think Taussig's work is a great example of this. I love his work. Could you elaborate a bit more on what comics can do?
Yeah, well, it's not as if writing and photography can't be resonant. You know, there's many great works of writing, you know, Gertz, Deep Play, Notes on a Balinese Cockfight. You know, there's a lot of amazing photography work out there. But it's just this additional, you know, engagement that drawing demands, I suppose, on the part of the audience, this additional imaginative closure that's required, the additional personalized meeting making that's required when we engage with drawing research or illustration in general. It just requires this additional narrative transportation. It opens up a safer space for critique. So there's much humanly interesting themes discussed in illustration work. If you want to look back at Mouse by Spiegelman, or even some of Crumb's work on consumer culture, there's huge critiques embedded in a lot of this stuff, but it's kind of in a much more safe space. It creates an emotional engagement, but at enough of a distance, I think. So that's one of the big pluses of illustration in general. I suppose even in consumer culture, we see, you know, things like BoJack Horseman, South Park, Simpsons. All of these are able to engage in this kind of critique and explore humanly interesting themes, but from the safe space then of illustration. I think that's the big thing that comic books and illustration can give, is to invite audiences into a curious elsewhere and to explore, you know, their own meaning of what's going on. It's, you know, to open up space for more interpretation and more theorizing. Yeah, that's just the beauty of comics, I think. Yeah.
And you included a chapter on what you called pandemic comics. So why were these a good case study to demonstrate comics as a research method?
Yeah, so one of the I suppose the best things about that project was the flexibility and responsiveness that it was able to incorporate into the broader project. You know, we weren't exactly able to collect a lot of data during the pandemic, so it was able to, you know, record and translate instances from walking, photography, ethnography, were all able to be translated into the comic book form. So we were able to see that we had all of this data that's being conducted worldwide, and it was then be able to translate it into this comic book form. So it was kind of an amalgamation of lots of different narratives. So that comic 10 business days is a general, again, critique on the societal response to the early days of the pandemic. It was created and drawn even before there was any talk of vaccines and things like this. So it really captured this heightened emotional stress that people were going through. So this project kind of took on a multi kind of art-based project, because the comic was very useful to explore the intensity of the pandemic, whereas then film was used to explore the emptiness and the nothingness that people faced at the same time. So I found that the ability for the different art forms to interrelate and to translate various different types of data was certainly one of the big benefits of the comic book form, that it can adapt and respond to the various different needs of the individual researcher.
And you included a lot of background on comic studies just in general in this volume, so it's definitely appropriate for folks who've never worked with comics before. And how did you navigate comic studies as a social scientist?
Yeah, so I benefited from being really interested in comic books as a child. So I loved the Bastard Kids and the Beano and all that stuff. So that was a big advantage, that I was kind of in love with the form already. But back in 2010, I was a little bit of ignorance of novelty, I suppose, because I didn't think anybody was using comic books in, you know, academic research. And you kind of believe that in my own little area. And then I went exploring it, and you realize that there's so much comic book research being conducted. So obviously then I have to start kind of deciphering between the different types. So definitely there's people exploring the communication theory around comic books. I found that was incredibly interesting and very important to discuss in the book also. Then you have people exploring the content of the comic books throughout the years, almost as a kind of historical research, which is, again, incredibly interesting to see, you know, what's embedded in there, you know, things like Plastic Man and things like this, which we just wouldn't get, wouldn't occur today. Then you have the people engaged in comic-based research, which I find incredibly interesting as well. But even still, I'm just coming across more and more research that's so valuable to comic book researchers and just all visual researchers in general. So even your rubric, even though it's just you know, supposed to be for peer review, is just incredibly useful in general to help those, you know, creating comic books, or even just to start understanding the need to why when you see the things in rubrics and, you know, the various different catalogs and handbooks. You're going to see that they're all incredibly valuable to all researchers, not just comic book researchers. So yeah, it's very difficult to gather up all of those niches, I think, for people working in the different areas. I think going forward, that's going to be the most important thing, to have all of those people working in comics to interact, and not so much have to make an argument for the medium, because I think all of us kind of believe that we've already made the argument, but to get to straighten it and to fortify it in a similar way that we see with film studies, even, you know, it would be great that if comic books eventually had that same, you know, legitimization, really, that I think it deserves, to be fair. So
I agree. Let's bring up comic studies.
Yeah.
Great. I used your handbook actually in a methods seminar with social scientist master's students, some of them in history and some of them in other fields. What is your approach to using the handbook, or just in general to teaching this methodology? Do you use the same path that you have in your book?
Yeah, I tried to use the same pattern in the book, but in the book, obviously, you need to discuss the chapters slightly a bit more separate, whereas in terms of illustration and research. But in the book, there is enough of the various different steps to both help those who maybe need some help with illustration, which is generally all of us, because it's fun to draw. So why not draw more? And those who are interested in research as well. So there's a number of accessible exercises, whether you want to strengthen your illustration skills, starting with simple object exercises, as drawing simple objects relevant to your research field or whatever. And then it moves on to the various different drawing the characters, sceneries, and so on. There's then also on the research side, you're just crushing on veracity and collecting, you know, enough of the right types of data and so on. From there, then we discuss how the comic can be used in different ways for inference. So you can have inductive or deductive research comics. You can also then use the comic book structure as a tool to, I suppose, measure the intensity of various different teams in your research, because if you can combine enough of photographs, data, quotes, and so on, you're kind of testing, you're triangulating the data as such. So within the book, there is enough of step-by-step exercises that you can use standalone to support research, or you can use individually in a combination that will build towards creating a research comic. Then when I kind of discuss the more, I suppose, the more theoretical side of it, then would be introducing new story world codes on top of maybe already coded data. So you can kind of reinterpret the data from the comic book lens, and you can include story world codes where, you know, you can start emphasizing memorable data moments and where they could appear in various different narratives and so on. So there's enough there in the book will help either with the illustration or with the research side, or to use in conjunction as well. So that was a goal, just to have enough of accessible exercises that make people more comfortable with a pen in their hand, essentially. That's the overall goal.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
I think you achieved that. And you had a really interesting concept that you circle around a couple times in the book. You start off by giving context about the socio-cultural media spiral. Could you describe that concept and also how you put it together?
Yeah, I thought when discussing comic books, often people, I won't say trivialize your research, but I found it's kind of important to stack things with a lot of theory up front. So there is a lot of theory to start at surrounding visual culture and communication technology. And a lot of that is to, I suppose, to legitimize the argument for comic books, maybe slightly more. So that was important to give the reader just some novel understanding of the evolution of communication technology and how they've impacted us in various different ways. So this conceptualization has been drawn heavily from McLuhan and Baudrillard and people like Bowman, some of the more critical media theorists. So it discusses looking at, you know, the earlier on storytelling moving towards the printing press and the order that brought with it and so on. And then the illustration of life and photographs and moving camera and things like this, where it I suppose this impacts society on this increased emotional empathic identification which we see rampant in social media culture currently, and which then brings us to the consumer claustrum, which is this confining nature of contemporary life and gadgets, from software thinking to deepfakes, AI, and all of the continuing digital pressure that we're kind of faced. That the argument was that we've kind of spiraled into accepting a lot of these technologies without any, you know, official acceptance or understanding of the impacts they're having in society. Whereas the argument that I discuss in the book is that a lot of this monitoring, tracking, regulation, the gamification of communication in general has led to a crisis of creativity, that we've become confined and we're not really thinking much outside, you know, outside the reality of software thinking, that we've become much more comfortable in accepting options and coming up with new ideas. And that's very worrying. So it's because of this then that I suggested this spiral aspect of when we can't, you know, when the poles of the real and unreal have collapsed, it's caused this spiral of despair, essentially, which I regard as this crisis of creativity. And the whole point then of the book is getting to address this crisis, and if comic books, it might be one way of doing it. There is then, of course, other media as well, films, you know, plays, well, whatever it takes really to kind of shake people from this kind of zombified thinking of social media, really.
And you outline the application of visual scholarship, which we can define broadly or narrowly as you wish, in several fields in the social sciences. Could you give us some of your favorite examples of this practice, either cases you mentioned in the book or something recent that you've come across?
Yeah, I could really talk about this all day, because I love talking about visual works, because, you know, I like talking about the things that inspire me to do more research, really. But one book that I could always talk about is Creative Explorations by Dave Gauntlett. This is an incredible methodological book focusing on everything from Lego to pipe cleaners to any visual aids that can generate new kinds of data. So that's a real good one, to be honest. I really like that. I don't discuss much in the book about consumer research, but the Association for Consumer Research Film Festival is something that I've attended a lot and has some really, really good films over the last number of years. Generally, I do get a lot of inspiration from film and attending local film festivals. So there's one I saw a number of years ago, All Inclusive. It's about essentially about a cruise ship. It's just really, really interesting. It's beautifully shot. I think you can get it online somewhere, by Karina Schweingruber. It's just really interesting, beautifully shot, some great scenes, good music, very, very short. So this is beautifully ethnographic. I really like things like that. In terms of that, yeah, I just love design work in general. So work of Wim Kroll in terms of graphic design, Bruno Maneri, Paul Klee. I just really, you know, really get inspired by, you know, really just good visual work. And I like going to museums a lot as well. It's obviously something I didn't really discuss enough probably in the book, or maybe academics don't discuss enough in general, is, you know, the inspiration that can come from just attending museums.
Definitely. And in this like wide range of visual media, also in the book, you cover a lot of ground and it's divided into a wide range of sections. But is there anything that you would have wished to take out and expand into a whole book?
The creative research agenda that I discuss, I would love to explore that a little bit more and to just to find more tools and more ways to connect new audiences in general. So I would like to, and towards the end of the book, I explore that in terms of knowledge translation and the multi-representational nature of comic books, that when we keep coming back to them, that they change in terms of how much more knowledge we've received ourselves. So they become much more of a knowledge refinery rather than a kind of a communication of knowledge, that you're welcoming people to an experience much more. If you're giving them the structure of the comic book, but the freedom to kind of explore their own meanings, their own narratives. And I think exploring these alternative shapes of knowledge and how we can utilize new media in academic work, that's generally where I kind of want to expand my research a bit more and see how we can close the gap between public and academic audiences, because finding is getting wider and wider. And we need more tools to kind of work as bridging devices that can link different disciplines together. And I think comic books obviously is one great one for that, but it's not the only one. But we just need to start exploring more of these avenues and not really be looking down at researchers who are focusing on methodology and who are focusing on closing these gaps between public and academic culture, because, you know, that's going to be really important moving forward.
Definitely. And in the sense of moving forward, one of the things that hasn't been discussed a lot in handbooks in general, I was wondering if you'd be willing to say anything about how comics-based research might complicate research ethics. For example, an illustrated author will expose authorship in double-blind peer review, or asking participants to draw can create some awkwardness, or member checking work can cause confusion, et cetera, et cetera. Do you have anything that you'd like to reflect on that?
Yeah, there's so many barriers to doing visual research. And like every couple of years, we'll see journals have a call for more visual research or special issues. But it kind of often gets a little bit left at those, which is a shame. But there is so many barriers to being a visual researcher, whether it's a comic book or even a film. You expose yourself very, very early in both, from either the illustrations or the voiceover, which is going to give you away absolutely immediately. So there's a lot of these barriers, yeah, and it's terrible. I'm lucky enough that I had stability in my career relatively early, so I was freed up to maybe focus on a lot of these things that were more personally interesting rather than, you know, chasing stars or specific journals or whatever. So yeah, visual researchers are up against it as well when they're competing with, you know, with journals that are, people have written kind of off-the-shelf methodologies to be publishable, that they're frequent in the journal, that are in vogue and fashion and so on. So we have a lot of these barriers naturally for visual researchers before you even start conducting the research. It's, you know, you have a few of these things that you have to kind of be willing to just accept, you know. Obviously, there's some very supportive journals out there and outlets that give people a chance, you know. it's just a shame that, you know, it can be a little bit more difficult to get into the better journals because of the lack of, I suppose, tradition. I suppose maybe is another problem that a lot of these visual media are a bit disruptive and seen as alternative, and then are often seen as lesser as a result, when we know that that is just not the case. If I think they draw in more meaning, more interpretation, so they're actually, they're extraordinary in that regard. And similar, even asking people to draw and to include that final drawing in your document or whatever, you know, it may not be the best drawings. You may be asking, you know, participants to draw. It may not be the best drawing, but it's not the artistic merit. It's the value of what's been discussed around it and so on. And so a lot of those things can, you know, lead to problems. But I just find this type of research so personally rewarding. I don't think I will be doing any. But again, moving forward, the more comic book and art-based researchers we can get talking to each deck, yeah, we can get talking, it'll kind of fortify the field and ensure that moving forward, maybe, you know, we'll have a better shout maybe at having a bigger impact.
Excellent. And moving forward on that theme, what are you working on right now, or what are you excited about?
Yeah, so I have a number of things on the go at the moment. Probably one of my favorite research projects has been my interspecies research on human-animal bonds. So I've befriended the local urban crows over the last number of years. So I've had a film, Wild Culture, The Travelling Playground, which is visually explore the relationship and the boundaries and the various different friendships and games we used to play. But I'm currently working on a contextualizing essay as well, just to kind of finalize that research area. So discuss maybe some of the decisions made on producing the film and some of the difficulties and so on. So yeah, I really love that research, the human-animal bonds. And then also over the last number of years, I've been conducting research on street stickers, so street art communication. I just find it a fascinating medium of communication. It completely resistant to the digital and the tracking and the monitoring. So I know people see it as a nuisance or maybe as graffiti or something along those lines, but in embedded in a lot of these street stickers are some really important themes. So I kind of frame it as this huge kind of consumer fovist movement of these people expressing, you know, crisis from the Anthropocene, biodiversity collapse, racism, gender rights, all of these issues we face in society are all written on stickers and stuck to the walls, but yet we all kind of ignore a lot of these things that are discussed. So I'm exploring this as a kind of a form of consumer ideology and how consumers are, you know, unable maybe to discuss or face some of these problems and require an artistic outlet to be able to, you know, discuss the crisis and maybe a lot of the pressures that they are facing in contemporary society. Besides that, I'm always looking for, you know, to work with new people in terms of visual work, film projects, and looking for just new ways to connect public and academic audiences. Yeah, so that's pretty much it for now. Yeah.
Those sound like amazing projects, and I'm really looking forward to seeing them develop and hear some results later. So Dr. Stephen Sullivan, thank you so much for your time, and it was a great pleasure to talk to you today.
Cheers, thanks very much. And if anybody has any questions, you know, get in touch over email or whatever. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks very much.